We'll do the 5 days gone by, of course. We'll do a little bit on the future of co-working. And we will end with some Netflix and chill now. Just turn it off, will ya? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Friday today, the 26th day of March. Good as always to have you along, everybody. And indeed, here we are, a Friday at the end of March. So let us see where things stand, shall we? Lots of talk from the Powells and the Yellens of this economy this week. A bunch of consumer stuff in this consumer economy. And that boat is still stuck in that canal. That's my favorite story. We will get to all of it. Sudeep Reddy is at Politico. Anna Swanson writes for the New York Times. Hey, you two.
Hey, Kai.
Hey, Kai.
Hey, Sudeep, can we start with you and the Powells and the Yellens of this economy? They gave testimony this week together virtually, of course. And oh, by the way, Treasury Department, if you're listening, please get your boss's better Zoom set up. I want to talk Powell first, Sudeep, and inflation. And he's kind of done talking about this. He's been about as clear as he can be. That number one, he's not worried about it. And number two, if it happens, he's got it.
Yeah, he is not somebody who wants to talk about it, but he's going to spend the next 6 months talking about it because we have this little feature of the 1 year comparisons coming up where all the economic data for the next 6 months is going to look really, really good compared to some really, really awful data from last year. And he's going to have to explain that away while keeping consumers happy and perhaps most importantly for his job, keeping bond markets calm. And if the bond market gets out of control, then he's going to have a problem on his hands where that'll ricochet through the housing market, create all sorts of other problems around the world. And then he's got a global crisis on his hands and that could dent the recovery. And so he knows all of this. He's aware of all of it. He's been trying to dance that careful line, but it's going to be a rocky few months for him to talk through that.
I will say, though, Sudeep, just real quick, staying with you for a minute, that the bond market's been reasonably calm since that week where it, you know, kind of got a little irate, right?
It did. The bond market's been going through these fits over time. It has a little fit. It calms down for a week or two, has another fit, and we can hope that it's just going to stay calm. But the trend in bond yield seems to be higher, and His message is very clear that rising bond yields when the economy is recovering is a sign of strength rather than a sign of weakness. And so he needs to keep saying that and hope that people all believe him along the way.
Yeah. All right, Anna, to the Yellens of this economy, I wonder what you make of the not really veiled reference that the Treasury Secretary made to the possibility of tax increases. The president's been pretty clear it'll be on companies and wealthier Americans over $400,000 a year, but it's an interesting conversation to be having.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I think the administration does see, tax increases as a big potential on the horizon here, given that they're also thinking about a lot more spending. Mm-hmm. I mean, the $1.9 trillion relief package was big, but they're thinking about plans for a $3 trillion package. And, you know, how are you going to pay for that? I mean, it could be financed in part through higher taxes on corporations and the rich. It's, you know, not clear exactly, how that gets through Congress, given Republican objections to that. Yeah. But, I think that's something that the Biden administration sees as a big part of their agenda for sure.
Sudeep, talk to me about the politics of a tax increase. I mean, you know, you could reconciliation it, I suppose, right?
You could, and that's probably the road they're headed down. Republicans obviously are not going to sign off on any tax or increases of any kind. It's political suicide for them going into primary season. So they're going to say no. And where we might end up is actually where a lot of Republicans and especially businesses wanted to be during the Trump tax cuts. They didn't ask for the corporate tax rate to be dropped as low as it is now. And so they were looking for something that was more of a middle ground, and Democrats are happy to give it to them. But that there will be some political cost to that they're going to be pushing forward. It's not going to be that hard to raise politically to raise taxes on big corporations. It's not going to be that hard to raise taxes on people making more than $400,000 a year. But there will be some turbulence along the way as they go through it.
Yeah. Okay, Anna, I want to I'm going to ask all the rappers this question over the next couple of weeks as y'all cycle through the show. Last week I asked the gang that was on, I said, look, does it feel to you, because it feels to me like perhaps we're turning a corner in this economy. And I wonder, this is just a gut check question. Do you agree or no?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, we had some positive data over the last week, you know, especially new claims for jobless benefits fell to their lowest mm-hmm. weekly level in a year. And, you know, it feels like the labor market is kind of shaking off the effects. You have more workers getting recalled to restaurants, movie theaters, gyms. You have more people traveling. Major airlines are adding flights again. So it seems like a sign that both the vaccine rollout and the relief packages are helping the recovery. And we feel like an economic rebound is coming. So still, I mean, we're still in the middle of a deadly pandemic. And so I don't want to be too rosy. I mean, I think there's, you know, there's a long way to go for sure for the millions of jobs lost, you know, to make up those millions of jobs. And then there's also this really troubling race right now between the vaccine rollout and new variants of coronavirus, right? So we have to watch, you know, whether we'll see cases rising in some states too.
So, and in fact, they are, right? Sudeep, same gut check mm-hmm. question to you. What's your sense?
You know, when I look out 6 months, it's hard to see anything but a quickly recovering economy, given all the signs we have right now. Mm-hmm. Of course, that is based on a giant assumption that nothing else goes wrong, that nothing else happens in the world.
Glad when we have you on the show.
That's worse than a ship stuck in the Suez Canal. There are other things that come up, like the pandemic came out of nowhere, and within 2 months had crippled everything. So obviously things can change, but you have to be optimistic if you look out at the pace of vaccination, which is incredible, and it is maybe starting to make up for our incredibly poor response early on. That like things are looking up, and we have to at least be positive about that.
Yeah. Okay, Anna, I cannot not think about this story, the ever given trapped still sideways in the canal. It is to me just number one, mm-hmm. it's just an amazing story. But the idea that 10 to 12% of global trade now is kind of stuck because of this. I mean, what are you, trade reporter for The New York Times? What do you think? What do you make of this?
Yeah, this is really an amazing story. This is not some tugboat. This is a quarter mile long container ship, which is blocking the canal, as you said, a channel for about 10% of global trade. It's costing about $10 billion a day, according to some estimates. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of the direct effect is on Europe because the Suez Canal is typically a route from Asia to Europe. But it's not, you know, just that products are stuck in the canal. It's also that you know, there's been larger disruptions in global trade and especially an imbalance and a shortage of shipping containers in certain ports. So, you know, for many months, the world has had trouble getting enough of these boxes back to Asia to get all of the Pelotons and toys and all this other stuff we've been furiously ordering off of Amazon to the United States and to other places. And it's led to this kind of cascading disruption that we've seen to supply chains. So, you know, even though the pandemic is coming to an end, I think we could still see more supply chain hiccups. You know, there's a global chip shortage right now that's affecting makers of cars and electronics, and certain products like produce and toilet paper are facing potential disruptions again. So that all might lead to some longer delivery times and higher prices that you might see at the store too.
Just say it, Anna. We're all stuck in the canal. Everything about it is stuck in the canal. It's the entire world through a globalized system stuck together. There we go.
It's
definitely a metaphor.
In so many ways. Sudeep Reddy at Politico, Anna Swanson at The New York Times. I love that story. Thanks, you two. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Wall Street Today, I tell you what, traders have turned the corner. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Hey, anybody out there remember WeWork, the co-working office space company? It was the new thing until it wasn't, and its rapid fall from grace culminated with the collapse of a proposed initial public offering of its stock. Well, the company is back in the hunt for access to the capital markets, not a traditional IPO, but something called a SPAC, Special Purpose Acquisition Company, SPAC. They are incredibly popular these days, SPACs are, and they have even gotten celebrity branding, come to think of it. Serena Williams is on the board of one. Paul Ryan, former speaker, is on another one. But what exactly are they? Marketplace's Sabri Benishore is on that one.
A SPAC is a corporation. It's gone public. It's done its IPO thing. It's got its own little stock ticker, but it does literally almost nothing.
Essentially just a cash shell.
Christy Marvin is CEO of SPACinsider.com. Like, yes, the SPAC has people who run it, but it doesn't make anything. It doesn't sell anything. Its sole purpose in life is to merge.
Go out and find a company that they want to, quote unquote, acquire.
Specifically, they want to find a real company that wants a quick and easy way to go public. The companies merge, and then the private company is now magically public without ever having to do an IPO.
A SPAC is an alternative means of going public.
Why do companies do this? Well, IPOs are risky. There's a lot of uncertainty, so sometimes it's easier to just merge with someone who's already done it. Plus, there's the bottom line. Milosz Vulanović teaches finance at EdX Business School.
So in terms of the cost, SPAC's a cheaper option, and in terms of time, they are shorter option.
Michael Olragi teaches law at NYU. He's written critically about SPACs and says there can be a downside for investors.
After they merge with companies, the share price historically has been experiencing really terrible performance.
Why is not clear, but he says investors in SPACs have done well in the past 5 or 6 months, and SPACs are becoming ever more popular. In all of 2019, 59 were created. In the first 3 months of this year, we're already at 296. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
A whole lot has happened, of course, since WeWork's last try at going public. Like, you know, a pandemic, millions of people working from home, assorted other workplace-oriented disruptive things. And that would seem to throw the whole idea of co-working as a business into some kind of question. Or does it? From our workplace culture desk, here's Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino.
When the pandemic first hit, the idea of co-anything was not appealing. Those big long tables and communal kombucha taps of co-working spaces were suddenly risky.
It was a lot of fear at first.
Craig McCanch owns Mojo Co-working in Asheville, North Carolina, which all but shut down last spring, but is slowly coming back to life. Whether it's parents escaping kids, travelers taking advantage of their new freedom to work wherever they want, or companies holding brainstorming sessions.
When you see it in person, when people are actually benefiting from being in a space together, it's not going to go away.
In fact, the pandemic could increase demand for flexible office spaces like these, says Ben Munn with JLL, an international commercial real estate firm.
The recent past has been very, very difficult, but the future is looking very different.
About two-thirds of the big companies JLL works with plan to utilize more short-term flexible office space because there's still a lot of uncertainty and companies might want to experiment, says business strategist Callie Williams-Yost.
A corporate lease is a marriage. With co-working, you can date and not get married, right?
The fact that workers will be given more choice about where they want to work also means offices will need to offer more than the old gray cubicles and elevator music, says Dror Polig, author of Rethinking Real Estate.
In order to attract them back, it will have to become attractive, just like any other product is attractive.
Andy says places like WeWork have already perfected those kinds of Instagram-ready spaces and amenities. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
Hey, do me a favor, would you? Listen to the Marketplace Morning Report. That's it. That's the ask. Spring is in the air, and in Washington, D.C., that means the start of cherry blossom season. Yes, it does. But also on Capitol Hill, it's Congressional Review Act season. There is legislating that's happening, but there's also a semi-regular push to roll back some of the rules set by the administration just departed, and the window to do that is closing, as Marketplace's Kimberly Adams tells us.
The Congressional Review Act, or CRA, only works in certain circumstances. The White House and Congress controlled by the same party, that party being different than the previous administration, which right now you have. And yet, says Bridget Dooling at George Washington University's Regulatory Studies Center.
So far, and this has all happened this week, legislators have introduced resolutions to disapprove 4 rules from the Trump administration.
One of the 4, says Lisa Stifler at the Center for Responsible Lending.
To eliminate a Trump-era regulation that helps lenders charge up to 200% APR or more and evade state and voter-approved interest rate limits in their states.
But back in 2017, when Trump arrived in the White House and the GOP controlled Congress, George Washington's dueling says over 30 rules were being subjected to the CRA at this point. Mario Loyola at the Competitive Enterprise Institute says that's because Republicans were on the same page about priorities.
The sort of establishment wing of the Republican Party and the Trump wing of the Republican Party agreed on very strongly that the Obama administration had really overreached in terms of its regulations and agency guidance.
Another reason for the difference between then and now, when Congress uses the CRA, it limits how agencies can regulate in the future, something Democrats seem a bit hesitant to do before the window closes later this spring. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
Coming up,
this Great Pyrenees, he's bigger than all of the staff.
I mean, that is why they call them great, right? Because they're big? First, though, let's do the numbers. I want one of those dogs, by the way. Dow Industrials gained 453 points today, almost 1.4%, 33,072. NASDAQ up 161, 1.2%, 13,138. The S&P 500 grew 65 points, 1.6%, closed at 39.74. For the 5 days gone by, the Dow up 1.3%, the NASDAQ down 0.5%, the S&P 500 up 1.5%. Ford Motors slowed a 0.1%. The automaker is stopping production of its F-150 pickup truck at a plant in Michigan this weekend because of, as Anna Swanson was telling us, the global shortage of semiconductors. Same problem at NIO, the Chinese electric vehicle manufacturer, pausing production for 5 days at its plant. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. I discovered the other day, much to my surprise, that my family has a subscription to HBO Max, which explains how some in the house have been binging The West Wing. But I digress. The point is that Netflix and HBO Max and Disney Plus have had basically a captive audience for the past year or so, joined along the way by Peacock and most recently Paramount Plus. The pandemic, though, is waning. The weather is getting warmer, and you can, if you want to, just turn off the TV and go outside. Believe you me, or better yet, believe Marketplace's Jasmine Garzd, the streaming platforms know this, and they are fighting back.
Be honest. How many baking shows have you watched in the last year? How many British royal dramas? What about Japanese shows involving pandas doing death metal karaoke? Anyone? No? Okay. Warm weather is always a slow season for broadcast, and this year, streaming platforms are dealing with especially antsy audiences. Professor David Offenberg focuses on the business of entertainment at Loyola Marymount University.
They're going from selling ice cream in the summer to selling ice cream in the winter. It's a very different marketplace they're going to face going forward.
Things started escalating a few months ago when HBO Max used Wonder Woman 1984 to usher in a new deal.
I don't want to be like anyone anymore. I want to be number one.
All Warner Brothers films will premiere on HBO Max this year instead of in movie theaters exclusively. NYU professor Charles Schrager, who is also a former HBO executive, calls it a bold strategy.
Bold and expensive, and makes a very big statement about what the future is for theatrical films.
Disney Plus just followed in those footsteps. It'll premiere Marvel's Black Widow on its own platform. Meanwhile, production overall has been rebounding. Los Angeles film permit applications have increased by 43% between January and February. Netflix this month reportedly dropped $55 million for a gothic horror film with Christian Bale and $18 million for the U.S. rights to a thriller starring Liam Neeson. The challenge for these companies will be keeping subscriber prices low while spending this kind of cash. Disney Plus is already raising prices, but cheaper membership plans supported by advertising may be the next big thing. HBO Max has just announced one for the summer. Tim Henlon is a media analyst with the Vertere Group.
Amazon and Netflix have to be looking very carefully at what HBO Max and Peacock have done.
There's big money to be made, says Hanlon.
Advertisers are clamoring to be in streaming video offerings because they know the vast majority now of viewership is not in linear television anymore.
In fact, network television just got dealt another crippling blow.
Welcome to Thursday Night Football.
Amazon Prime will be paying a reported $1 billion a year to the NFL for exclusive rights to stream Thursday Night Football, starting in 2023 for 10 years. It's an actual game changer, says Tim Hanlon.
The inclusion of digital rights in the NFL's new deals with all of the big broadcast television entities is the beginning of the end of the classic broadcast television and local TV station model.
But there's still going to be a lot to watch this summer and some lower price options. Yes, it is a beautiful day and your friends are waiting for you, but so is the Justice League. I'm Jasmine Garst for Marketplace.
Consumer spending fell overall last month, but spending on services flipped up just a tad as people get back to doing instead of buying and leaving home and going back to work or on vacation maybe. So spare a thought, would you, for the dogs left behind and the businesses that serve them.
My name is Tara Robertson, and I am the owner of Pupstars Pet Care in Chicago. Pupstars Pet Care does dog walking, daycare, boarding, training, grooming, and retail. Like every business, there's been a significant decrease in revenue and the way we operate day to day. We went from nearing 55 dogs a day to having about 8 at the start of the pandemic. The dogs that are returning, you know, to our care from before the pandemic, they were already customers. We haven't seen them for a year. Now they're walking into the door and we have to slowly integrate them back into group. And they're acting different than when we saw them before the pandemic. We're like, what's going on? You have anxiety now and, you know, these new habits. It's really interesting to see. For example, we have this dog who is a huge Great Pyrenees. I mean, he's bigger than just about all of the staff when he, you know, jumps or stands on two. He pretty much had a long hiatus from coming to Pupstars. And when he came back, it was very difficult to get his attention. We need him to come and he's playing hard to get. So we spoke to the parents and we said, we know that you're home, but he needs to come multiple times a week. He needs that structure. And they did that. And it's been amazing. The eye contact we get from him, it's a night and day difference. depending on, you know, what our government does and, you know, the phases that they roll out capacities for businesses. And we might have 10, you know, 15 new dogs in a week. And that is a lot to try to place, you know, in a short period of time. Dogs' personalities, their, you know, temperaments, size, everything. So I think it's really everybody's, you know, frame of mind, dog and human alike. We just have to, you know, figure it out.
There we do. If you want to tell us about your economy, dog or human or cat, don't at me, but dogs are better. You can tell us at marketplace.org/myeconomy. This final note on the way out today, a tad bit more cultural than economic, but I'm going to go with it anyway. The French government has petitioned UNESCO. That's the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. They want to have the humble baguette given cultural heritage status because, first of all, it is kind of a cultural icon over there. But also, come on, there's nothing like a good, warm, crunchy baguette, right? Maybe some cheese, good stinky cheese stuff. And to the marketplace of it, during pandemic lockdowns, yes, bakeries in Paris were essential businesses. All right, we're out. Here's your Friday afternoon moment of economic context. It is going to be quick because Anna touched on it, but we are going to do this for as long as that thing is still there. Is the ship still stuck.com? Check it out. The answer, by the way, is yes. 3.5 days now at $400 million an hour in costs to global trade. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Nancy Cassett is the managing director of news. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you Monday, everybody. Have yourselves a great weekend, would you? This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.